new book has been published by a local man entitled UVF Behind the Mask. It tells the history of the Ulster Volunteer Force from its post-1965 incarnation to the present day, with access to leading members and the inner workings of the paramilitary organisation. I've been speaking to its author, Aaron Edwards, and I began by asking him about his own background.
Well, that's a very interesting question to
yeah,
begin with.
It is.
I'm originally from Newton Abbey, and of course I've been in England now for almost 10 years, and I have been studying the UVF, Loyalist Paramilitaries, for quite some time now as an academic. And in fact, these days I spend most of my time looking at political violence around the world, and this book was an opportunity to look back at essentially where I came from in terms of my academic development, personal development over the years, and bring some of that, some of the skills that I've developed since leaving Northern Ireland to analyse this particular group.
Why a focus on the UVF?
Well, I think that I had several unanswered questions in my own mind from my academic work on Loyalist paramilitaries, and I thought that it was an opportune moment to ask some of those questions of quite a number of people who were connected with the UVF over the years, quite a number of whom had gone to serve lengthy prison sentences. And really, I thought that the context had shifted, where we were dealing with legacy issues predominantly in Northern Ireland, and I thought that a lot of other people would want to hear the answers to the sorts of questions that I was asking.
How would you describe, Aaron, a typical member of the UVF?
Well, I don't think there is a typical member of the UVF, and academics have a tendency to say, when we're talking about armed groups, when we're talking about terrorism, insurgency, that people join for very different reasons. I think that what surprised me most is that I had I was keenly aware of the tabloid caricature of what a loyalist paramilitary or what a UVF man looked like, and really I was surprised when I came across people who looked pretty average, and that was something that I think will be shocking to many people, because we have this view of them, we have this image of them, and it's very difficult to square that with some of the people that I spoke to, who I thought were quite engaging, well-read, and actually quite reflective on what they had done. And that surprised me most, I think, in my research.
And what about its leaders, Aaron?
Well, some of them. One of the individuals that I profile in the book, the late Billy Mitchell, who died 11 years ago, I found him to be a very intriguing individual. He had been responsible for much of the UVF violence in the 1970s in a command position. He had led the organisation. He was one of its most senior members, and he had been captured by the army and police in 1976 after going on the run. He had a very dark past, but certainly when he went into the prison system, he started to reappraise his actions. And I met him in later life after he had been released from prison, and I did a series of interviews with him. He was, as I say, an intriguing man, because I was keenly aware of his background. I was also aware of the backgrounds of other people such as David Irvine and Billy Hutchison. But I found them on the whole to be, as I said, reflective of their involvement in paramilitarism.
Regretting it?
Well, this is, again, it's a difficult question. I did ask this question of a number of my interviewees, and I didn't exactly get straightforward answers. I think that some people who had done some really horrible things in a private, quiet moment were prepared to admit that what they did, they would certainly not do today, but that would be as far as they went. Other people, as I've detailed in the book, had no regrets of their involvement at all. But I think it's a question that needs to be asked more generally of the organisation, this UVF group, as we should have Republican paramilitaries. Not everyone joined at the same time, so they experienced things in a very different way. Some became involved in violence. Some were responsible for bombings and shootings. Others were not, and that meant it was a very complicated story that I needed to tell. And so I really needed to, as I say in the introduction to the book, I try to really pull apart the motivations to, in an academic sense, disaggregate these motivations, because I don't think that they all joined because they were sectarian. I don't believe that they all joined because they wanted to kill people. But let's face the reality here. This is a paramilitary organization. What they do is kill people. And so they would express the view to me when I would say to them, well, you know, you were involved in violence, you were involved in atrocities and so on and so forth. And they would say, well, this was not the BB. It's a very, I suppose, flippant way of putting it, but they knew what they were involved in. And it's a question that I think may go unanswered as we move forward in the legacy process about what this group thinks collectively, because they have set out on a number of occasions their views, which are a collective view that what they did was the right thing to do. And I couldn't change the mindsets when I was interviewing people.
Let's talk about now, because obviously people can read a lot more about many of the questions I'm not asking. They can read a lot more about this in the book. Let's fast forward to present day. How do members of the UVF, Aaron, justify their continued existence, given the Good Friday Agreement, the ceasefire? How are they justifying it in their own head?
I have asked that question, Stephen, and the answer that I get, I personally don't find it satisfactory, and I must emphasise that, because you will find in my book that I take a very different view of this group and their activities over the years that people might expect an academic from that background, from Newton Abbey, which is predominantly Unionist Loyalist, to take. Their view is that young people are very angry today, and that they must channel that anger in a way that keeps this from boiling over. As I've said, I'm not satisfied with that. I think that the UVF called a halt to its armed campaign 10 years ago and then decommissioned in 2009 because it felt that the union was safe, and that was the reason why they had come about. Certainly in the 1970s, guys, they saw themselves as protecting their community, defending their community. But as we know today, circumstances have radically changed. They believed that a threat was there from Republican paramilitaries. I just can't see that at the moment. And I know an awful lot of people will agree with that. I think some people will disagree. But the reality is that that's the rationale that they give. And I think you'd have to ask that question of people who speak in their behalf, which I most certainly do not.
Are they active at the moment?
Well, there was an assessment done by the Police Service in Northern Ireland in 2015 that pointed to two things. It said that the leadership of the UVF was committed to the peace process, that it's essentially a peace leadership, and that it's superintending the process towards an eventual civilianisation of the group, which is quite a common phenomenon around the world, that these groups, once they finish their campaigns, then they go off and do something else.
Here's what I really want to ask. Are they anything more than a criminal gang? Drug dealing and racketeering?
Well, the Police Service of Northern Ireland report suggested that individual members were still involved in those nefarious actions. And here's the thing, the individual members have always been involved in racketeering, and they did it during the conflict. They would say, when I asked this question, they would tell me that they did that in order to raise funds to fund their campaign. But given that their armed campaign is finished, I think that's a question that does need to be asked of them today. And it's certainly how I finished my book. I finished the book with a number of other questions that need to be taken up by someone else. And certainly that's a question that needs to be asked of them today. Well, why are they still in existence?
Well, in your book, you reveal that the former PUP leader, David Irvine, suspected that Billy Wright, he headed the UVF in Mid Ulster, didn't he, before he was expelled, was working for the British, was an agent.
Mm-hmm.
What proof do you have for that?
Well, this is a suspicion that's held. The book itself is a little bit more balanced. I spoke to people who were associates of Billy Wright, and they categorically denied that he was an informer. So you've got what we have here is me interviewing people and them telling me this, and I do have my doubts. Certainly in the 1990s, if you look at that particular chapter, you will see that Billy Wright was working against the peace process, even though he embraced it to begin with. And I would suggest that perhaps he was. I asked that question of the UVF leadership. They issued a statement to me, and they said that he'd come under the spell of certain politicians. Now, I don't know what they mean by that, but I'm guessing that it's local politicians. So it really is a puzzle. I don't believe that it's as cut dry as what we're talking about as informers. What I can tell you that there are certainly cases where the UVF claim to have gone to seek out for assassination senior Republican figures, and they were prevented from doing that. So that's another unanswered question. All I can do is simply look at the evidence that's presented and infer as much as I can about where I think the truth lies. But in all of this, I don't see there being an overarching truth. That came quite clear when I interviewed people. It's almost, if I can describe it as a car accident that people witness, if five people witness it, five people will come away and tell a different story. So in that respect, it was very difficult to unpack that, to get it actually if that was the truth or not. So I think people will have to make up their own minds when they read the book.
Well, and I hope they do so. Listen, well, that's just a snapshot. Obviously, there's a lot more detail in the book, and we appreciate your time today. Thank you very
much. Thanks very much, Stephen.
Thank you.